Ladies and gentlemen, racing enthusiasts and philosophical ponderers alike, welcome to episode 31 of F1 Philosophy. In today's episode, we'll dive into the high-octane drama of the Mexican Grand Prix, where penalties flew as fast as the cars on the track. Our panel of philosophers will dissect the causes, consequences and fairness of these decisions, offering insights that only a true F1 aficionado with a PhD in pondering can provide. But that's not all. As we shift gears, the anticipation builds for the Brazilian Grand Prix. We'll explore the strategies, rivalries, and the carnival-like atmosphere that only Interlagos can deliver. Now, before we jump into the fray, brace yourself for a truly wild ride. Our very own Nick is gearing up to transform into a raving lunatic on air, unleashing a whirlwind of raw, unhinged fury against Ollie Bearman and the Haas team. Imagine a mad genius spiraling into a frenzy, railing against the racing universe and its stewards with relentless intensity. Hold on to your hats, it's going to be a spectacle. Now, on to the work at hand. A few formalities, if you will. You may find us on YouTube at F1 Philosophy, on Instagram at F1_philosophy, and finally, drop us a line at F1philosophypod@gmail.com to join our ever-entertaining fantasy league.
You don't know that for sure, Gatsby. Okay, what if I was going to be nice to Bearman?
I mean, statistically.
Yeah, statistically, that's on his side. He's absolutely right. I may, but I may not. And, you know, I'm not going to say now. We'll wait till we get to Brazil. But that was a little rude, Producer Gatsby. I think he's mad that I brought Cairo around the last couple episodes.
Yeah, probably didn't help your case.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is and there isn't a lot to talk about from Mexico. And there's definitely a good amount to talk about in Brazil. So we'll get into it. But since I had such poor manners last week, Sean, how was your week?
It was okay. It was better than last week.
Last week you got a little roughed around the edges, so to speak. You got your feathers ruffled.
Yeah, I think last week was just really busy, really hectic.
Mm. Yeah, that was me this week.
Yeah. You want to talk about it?
You want to listen? You want to be a therapist?
I'm willing to let you talk.
My week was insanely busy, yeah, and it started on the beginning of the actual day of the week, Sunday. So everybody always thinks Monday's the first day of the week. Technically, it's Sunday. The Lord's Day, as Sean calls it.
Not once.
Yeah, that was the joke. Sunday, I experienced something at the restaurant I've never experienced in my life before. We went from empty to full with just two servers in 15 minutes. I was the restaurant version of assaulted.
So just assaulted.
Just assaulted. Just end battery. And yeah, it was a tough time. I got through it. There were some sparks that flew out of me, some comments that I wish I can take back, but can't, at customers.
Do you need a lawyer?
Maybe. Gatsby is a good one.
No.
Senna?
But I do know a lawyer.
Oh, okay. Does he want to come on this podcast and walk me through it?
Probably not.
Okay. What did you need a lawyer for?
I'll plead the fifth on that one.
Okay. Well, good. In the customer's defense, though, I shouldn't have been out that late dressed that way. This is a bad joke. Okay, fine.
All right. I think I regret asking you to elaborate, but that's okay.
You always do. The odds were against me making a good comment there. Anyways, let's start. Let's get into Mexico. Do you have our predictions?
I do.
Let's talk about it first so that people can forget right away what we did.
Yeah. So we both had Charles, P1.
Okay, that's not bad considering there was a Ferrari win.
Right. And he was looking like he was going to get second place for the majority of the race.
More on that later.
You had Piastri P2.
A McLaren, okay. Two wrong Ferraris and McLaren, but sure.
I had Max.
Maybe.
We both botched our P2 pretty hard.
I think P2 would have been in Max's orbit if not for the penalties that we're going to talk about in a bit.
Possibly.
Well, I won't say what I think, but yeah. Three, who did we have?
You had Max and I had Piastri.
Yeah. Yeah, great.
Four. And then Lewis and Russell.
Who, you had Lewis, I had Russell?
No, you had Lewis.
Okay, so you got fourth, right?
No.
No, actually.
You got fourth, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, whoops. So we just flipped, you and I flipped the Mercedes, right? Because you had Lewis fifth?
Yes, I had Lewis fifth. You had Sainz fifth.
55-5. Had one hell of a weekend this weekend. Just dominated qualifying with a really good lap. Mm-hmm. Like out of nowhere, nobody saw that coming. He was fast, but like nobody saw him taking pole, and then he just took the race over like he does.
Nobody ever expects a Spanish pole position. No?
No. No.
Play on nobody ever expects a Spanish Inquisition? No?
No.
All right.
Nobody ever expects Sainz until he does.
Yes.
I think that's the best way to put it. And when he does, once again, comes out after favorable pit stop strategy for Leclerc again.
Yep.
And Sainz still close to Leclerc, just made that gap again, just like he did in Australia.
He was on it. He knew what that Ferrari needed to go fast around that track, and he made it happen.
It's odd to me that he's just so, when it comes to that, that's his most inconsistent thing, is winning races, because you see this in him and you think, how can you not challenge for a title with these types of drives?
And this is one time where I think I'm on board with Jordan, is that the pressure is off. The pressure is off. He knows he doesn't have to perform at Ferrari. He knows he doesn't have to perform for a seat. He owes the team nothing, effectively. So now's his time to shine.
And if you remember correctly, to your point, in Australia, the pressure was off. He was faster than Charles the first two races and then won that race.
Yeah.
Because they had already signed Lewis. So yeah, that's a really good point. He's the only driver this year who got signed and did good and got better. If we think of all the other ones who got signed early on, didn't help him with Yuki, Fernando, Perez, sorry, I almost forgot the biggest one. Like Perez being signed was supposed to really just take all the pressure off him. And I don't have the prices right horn right now, but Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
So Ferrari looks fast again, but were they actually the fastest this weekend? Because McLaren really came alive again at the end of the stints.
Yeah, and I'm probably going to botch this, but it may have been Piastri in SQ2 ended up at the top after his second flying lap on a set of mediums.
SQ2, not in Mexico. This is
in Brazil.
In Brazil, okay.
Sorry, I've jumped ahead. Okay,
it's okay. Yeah. But you're making a point about McLaren being fast, even in Mexico.
Yeah, but I completely forgot what we were talking about for a second. So, yes, in Mexico, I would agree they're not necessarily the fastest car out there. They had pace, and they were doing well, but I think the Ferrari was genuinely a fast car.
Okay, because then what was going on with Leclerc? And we saw him almost. So you're saying you think the Ferrari was genuinely a fast car. Are you saying equal to McLaren? Are you saying maybe a little bit faster?
In Sainz's hands, a little faster.
Interesting. Yeah.
Leclerc was doing well. Lando was catching him. But this weekend was a case study in driver comfort. Because the top three teams all had one driver doing very well and one driver doing not so well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ferrari had less of that problem, but it was still very clearly there because at the end of the race, Leclerc was 20, 30 seconds behind, something like that.
His own doing.
Yeah, but the mistake wasn't 20 seconds.
Mm.
Right? He dropped back considerably. Once he wasn't under pressure, he gave up.
Usually he's the other way around with that. Once all the pressure's off him, he can drive well for second place. So you would have hoped he could have maybe taken that back from Norris, if you're a Ferrari fan.
I think potentially he was pushing harder than he felt comfortable. And then after his little adventure, he realized that I'm now pushing too hard and I just need to bring it home.
Hmm. That makes sense. Kudos to Norris, though.
Mm-hmm.
The McLaren wasn't looking great for a while. They really came alive in the race.
Yeah, but I feel like we've said this a few times during the season that in practice and qualifying, the McLarens looked kind of mid-pack, and then they come out and they have great race pace.
It's their stints. That's their superpower.
Yeah.
Their tire stints, which nobody else has figured out. I wonder if anybody figures that out next year or if they just carry this over. And so far, there's no evidence of that because, like, yeah, Ferrari was really fast in Austin and then lost some of it, I think, in Mexico, like comparatively.
Mm-hmm.
So it just means, like, once again, Ferrari's just like a flash in the pan weekend type of thing at the moment. Even though, yeah, they did win two races in a row. What we just talked about, it seemed like Sainz was on it, not necessarily the whole Ferrari team. So, look, at the way it's shaping up right now, it's probably going to be McLaren versus Ferrari next year. But Ferrari can't have varying weekends. They need to start going on runs if they want to challenge McLaren.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this today, actually. So McLaren the last 2 years have started slow and come on strong. And Ferrari has started strong, kind of phased out in the middle, and then ended strong.
Hmm.
And both of those teams, if they want to be serious title contenders, need to be more consistently there. That's what's made Red Bull as dominant as they were and why they're still in the mix of things. So I think if McLaren is serious about winning the Constructors and winning Drivers' Championships, they need to have this level of performance from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if Ferrari is there or thereabouts, because then they're not running uncontested.
Especially, let's not throw away Red Bull just yet. And let's get into Red Bull right now. Let's not throw them out of the equation just yet. They could still start strong next year. And Max and Sergio seem to have those first six races down packed, which are going to be a little bit different next year because it's Australia, then Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, if I'm not mistaken, or something along those lines.
Yeah, it is a little mixed up compared to what it was this year.
Yeah. Japan, I think, is early again, too, which you and I said we'd like. I'm okay with it. Japan should be early or late, in my opinion, but never in the middle. Red Bull, though, had another Jekyll Hyde weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. I don't even know what to say about Sergio Perez anymore that we've hashed out a million times, but this was supposed to be the relieving race.
He can't race in Mexico.
Yeah, but I think last year he crashed. It was 2 years ago he finished third. Right? Like, it was either two or 3 years ago he finished third.
I think it was three because 2 years ago he ran into Yuki.
So the 2022, let's look this up right now, Mexican Grand Prix. I might be mixing up my years yet because he was really good at the 2021 for sure. And but I'm just trying to double check here. He did.
He finished third?
He ran into Yuki in a collision damage after lap 50. So maybe that's why Sergio was tame. I don't know. I don't know what happened there.
I remember the incident. I don't remember if it had any huge negative impact on him. I think it ruined Yuki's race.
Yuki went out.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's still like, considering how good the Red Bull was in 2022 and Max had already wrapped up the season, he probably should have won that race if not for that incident, right? And it was actually the same 2 years in a row. So 2021 was also Max Lewis Sergio. Mm-hmm. 2022 was Max Lewis Sergio. But yeah, the last 2 years, he definitely can't race in Mexico. The point I'm trying to make, I think, is all of Red Bull had avoided the talk about getting rid of him because they thought, okay, we still want him there for Mexico. And we think he'll do good in Mexico. And that did not pan out, to say the least.
No.
Bad in qualifying, even worse in the race. I don't know what your thoughts are between the incident between him and Lawson.
Do you want to get into it or do you want to...
Let's talk about that one first before we talk about the other Red Bull incident.
Okay.
I saw Sergio dive bomb Lawson where he had no business dive bombing him. I understand why he did it, and I don't think it was necessarily a big penalty. He probably just deserved a 5-second penalty, but he was definitely desperate in that corner.
I would say he was desperate because he knew he had no business being that far down the grid. I didn't see anything necessarily wrong with the move. It was tight. It was on the limit. And I think Perez thought he could get away with it because it was another Red Bull team with a new driver who he thought he was going to be able to bully. And Lawson very literally said, fuck you, and kept it in there.
And on the radio asked his teammates, so what the hell is he doing? And they said, to your point, head down, shut up.
Yes.
So what you just said is exactly right. The other team said, hey, stay out of his way.
Yeah, but and when you look at it, forgetting the team game, forgetting all the rumors around who's going to take whose seat, it was a rookie sticking it to a front-running or allegedly front-running driver, not wanting to give him the easy position. And I didn't see anything wrong with the move. It was aggressive from Perez, but the defense was also aggressive from Lawson.
100%.
They both stayed on the track. Yeah, there was some damage, and it ended up costing Perez a whole host of positions and ultimately not going anywhere. But that's what you get when you race hard. That is always an option.
I want to put a pin on that and remind me about hard racing. The reason why I bring that up is because to the letter of the law, he was behind going into the apex. He pushed it. Like, he dove to get that line. You know what I mean?
The difference is they both stayed on the track. They both stayed on the track. They both made the corner.
Let's talk about that. But just before, to put a pin on Lawson and Perez, is Lawson showing his arrogant streak, or was he right to maybe want to put his elbows out and say, I'm not the one you push around here?
He's a racing driver. He's entitled to defend his position. I don't see anything wrong with him defending hard. Now, giving Perez the finger on the way past, it's a bit of a douchebag move. Some of the comments he's made, calm down, Liam. You know, he does, like we talked about, he does have that Gasly level arrogance. You're too new to have that attitude. You're more than entitled to do what you did. Just be a little more humble about it.
Pissing off Fernando, A+.
Sure.
Pissing off Sergio, a little ridiculous.
I don't care about him pissing off Sergio. Just not giving him the position was enough to piss him off. I don't care about that. It's the attitude in doing it. It's almost like Lawson felt entitled to do it.
Yeah. He's fighting in Lawson's defense. I didn't like it. But in Lawson's defense, he's fighting for his position. He's fighting for his position in the team. He still does not have a guaranteed contract.
No, exactly. And as far as a racing move, it's fine. Just don't be a cunt about it.
And speaking of someone who was a cunt about it, Max versus Lando. I want to just say before I let you go, I wasn't crazy about them giving a 10-second penalty for the first one for the same reason. Like you said, it's hard racing. Max was trying to chase Sainz, obviously saw Lando come, I think shut the door a little too late. I didn't go off the handle after I thought about it, after I texted you and you calmed me down a little bit, because you're right. To the letter of the law, it was the wrong thing to do. The one that was just, I can't even defend, is because I love hard racing. I like drivers that defend their positions, even if it means squeezing them a little bit. I can't defend what he did at turn eight, which was just, he's done that before at Brazil. He was willing to crash. He was like, I'm willing to die for this.
Yeah.
It's bad. But yeah, I'll let you talk about it, what you think, and you'll have a better take on this than I do, I think.
I think we're going to come out at the same place. So it turns out that in the driver's briefing on Friday, there was quite a bit of discussion about what happened in Texas. Mm. And all the drivers except one, and nobody has said who that one person is, but I think it's pretty clear, agreed that the driving standards need to be assessed, and what Max did to Lando should have been the penalty, or should have been a penalty. Because yes, Lando did break a rule and he deserved the penalty that he got, but forcing him out there was also not up to what the driving standard should be. And by the letter of the law, and I will concede that I was giving more credence to what the driving standard should have been as opposed to what it actually is, to the letter of the law in Texas, Max didn't do anything wrong. I still stand by he should have gotten a penalty, but they didn't because it wasn't clearly outlined that way in the regulations.
A penalty for forcing a driver off?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, on to Mexico. Friday, they had their driver's briefing, as they always do, and that was a big discussion point. And the agreement was, we will change it. And we will change it for 2025, but we will also move forward from Mexico.
Oh, I thought it was Qatar for some reason. But yeah, no. Yeah.
We will move forward from this weekend, being last weekend, with the new standards. So Max knew he can't do that. And I went back and I wanted to make sure that I looked at this from every possible angle. So I went back and I watched the onboards of the laps leading up to, the lap of, and the laps after from Max and Norris. So Max, for whatever reason, could not negotiate turn three. I don't know what it was. He was all over the curbs every lap I watched. Clobbering the curbs, the car is unstable, gets unsettled. Ultimately doesn't matter, but there's something to be said about the car was a little unpredictable. Okay. By the time he made it to turn four, his lines were dead consistent for every lap I watched, except one.
The incident of between him and Norris.
Yes.
Okay.
So on the run from three to four, he hugs the left-hand side of the track because that is the line. Down the straight, moves towards the right, cuts the apex, and stays in the middle of the track. Lap after lap after lap before the incident, that's his line. Cut late to the right, clip the apex, end up in the middle of the track, past the apex of turn four. Now, the lap of the incident, he's chasing down Sainz. He's right behind Sainz. And as he starts to come over, you see the wing of the McLaren just on the side of the camera. He tries to squeeze and then realizes, no, I'm not going to do that. So he backs off a little bit. So he didn't squeeze Norris. Norris was already there. not ahead, but he was there. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to push him off. Fine. Clips the apex at the same point that he would have every other lap, but is all of a sudden two wheels and half a car over the line on the right-hand side, no longer in the middle of the track. Every lap before that, he had at least a car's width to the right-hand side of his car. He intentionally pushed Norris off that track when he could have made that corner the exact same way he did.
So they don't really care any more than about whether who's ahead or behind. This was more just etiquette.
It does matter who is ahead or behind. Yes.
Because it sounds like he's ahead. That's why I say that.
He is ahead. And he is entitled to keep that position. The differentiating factor here is he had control of the car. It wasn't that his line was compromised and the car was forced to go wide. You see it. You can see it just by judging the speed that the car is going, but I'm sure it's there in the data as well. He lets off the brake. He lets off the brake and he doesn't put the same steering input in.
That's naughty, yeah.
He intentionally pushed wide knowing he could have given the space because he is ahead. And the next corner is a quick right hand.
Which Norris has the line.
No.
Oh.
Max would have had the line. Because Max would have been in the middle of the track to clip the apex on the inside with Norris still behind him.
Hmm.
So Norris would have had to back out or risk hitting Max. Or going off and passing off track. All Max had to do was wait for one corner, which is immediately after. There's no straight, there's no nothing. It's a left-right.
And nothing Sainz is doing can affect him. Like, he's not going to bump into Sainz from behind. Like,
Sainz
is gone.
Sainz has cleared the corner.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's why Max got that penalty. And because it was early in the race, not the first lap, they had just talked about it on Friday. That's an automatic penalty there. And the rule book says that is a 10-second penalty.
Hmm. Yeah, you're right. But it's harsh. That one was, I'll say harsh. I would rather they gave him 15 seconds for what he did next, which you're about to talk about.
Well, we'll finish this one first. So Max clearly didn't learn from Austin to Mexico. Same thing after being told, don't do it. Didn't learn. Lando ultimately didn't make the corner. So, regardless of Max trying to push him off, Lando wouldn't have made the corner. And Lando didn't make the corner because he pushed him off. So, Lando ended up ahead of him because he cut the corner, gave the position back. Lando learned from the week before. I can't pass off track. Fine. I'll wait till my next opportunity at turn 8.
Yeah, well, that's where the next penalty was, yeah?
Yes. Where Max does the exact same thing. But even more aggressive.
That was really bad.
That one you can definitely see in the speed where he gains speed going through the apex.
Mm. And yeah, that's unacceptable. For someone who was upset, not a whiner, but he was upset about what Hamilton did to him at Cops in 2020 and 21.
Right.
2020, 2021. What am I, 15 years old? You can't then go and do that to Norris. Like, you can't, like, you can't be a huge hypocrite like that. Cause that's my biggest problem with that. That he's like, let's go. Like, let's drag race. Let's see who's willing to crash and burn.
Right. So,
yeah.
It's been said a lot in different interviews from different people, you know, will Max learn anything from this? He'll learn that it's unacceptable. He'll still continue to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that may cost him. At this point, I think it's too late in the season for it to cost him his world driver's championship.
That's probably what he's banking on.
Right. We'll see what it does next year if he continues this when we have close fights.
Yeah.
So, people think it's harsh. it's exactly what the rule book says it should be. And now it should be clear to everybody that if you're intentionally forcing drivers off track, closing the door when there is no need to do it, and in both cases it's clear, he rolls off the brake and he doesn't turn the steering wheel. It's an intentional move to force a driver off the track, to force them into a situation where they can't pass him, but it's also creating extremely dangerous situations.
And I agree with Jordan and Coulthard on this too. Funny enough, this week we finally agree with, we both agree with him. He's being Michael Schumacher of this generation.
Yes.
And yeah, I loved it back in the day, but it was different racing. This isn't what it's going to be anymore. They've made it clear. The cars are different. I'm not actually complaining. I'm very optimistic for the future. But that has been phased out. That type of racing is now phased out. And Max can't expect to get away with it or complain and say, oh, you just let me race hard type of thing.
They are letting you race hard. We saw what you can do. Sergio and Lawson were racing hard.
That's different hard racing. That's different than that. Max was legitimately, like, squeezing people is not acceptable anymore.
No, but this is my point. So same corner, Perez and Lawson was the same corner as Max and Lando. Racing hard, you can fight through those corners without trying to kill each other. Neither Lawson or Perez didn't want to let the other one go.
As far as we know.
Everyone stayed within the bounds of the rules.
I was saying, as far as we know, they didn't want to kill each other. As far as we know.
Well, you have to assume.
You have to assume.
Oh.
You're right. And I'm glad I have someone like you to text to calm me down, because my initial thought was just that first one was ridiculous. But the more I think about it, you're right. If his onboards are there to show he's doing it on purpose, you got to stop him. You got it. Like, if week over week we're having discussions about this and you're not changing, you're the only one not changing, that's how you clamp down.
Yeah.
That was Magnussen earlier in the season with Hamilton.
Yes.
Magnussen was a little bit more worse because he was way behind going to the corner and didn't stop. And luckily Hamilton saw him. Otherwise, that was a T-bone, potentially a very dangerous crash.
Yes.
Can I give a eulogy for hard racing before we move on? And I just say, it's going to be quick.
If you want.
I'm going to miss it. It's clearly being phased out. Someone like Max Verstappen is not long for F1. All right, and at least his type of dealing with faster drivers. He's either now has to be the fastest car in the best car that's best for him, or he's going to try and kill people. And I think at some point they're going to force him out or phase him out, and they're going to be happy that he retires, or he's going to want to retire.
If that's the case, and if Max is incapable of racing hard without creating a dangerous situation, then he shouldn't be there.
Yes and no. I would like the other drivers to fight a bully back without having to go to mommy or daddy or the principal and hit him. And show him that we're not gonna take this shit.
Yeah, but physics isn't on your side. You need to start watching sports cars. Because that sounds a lot like what you're asking for. Go watch sports car racing.
I'm not saying every race. I'm saying once in a while. Like, I think... Yeah, sorry. Continue your point about sports cars.
No, that's what you see. You see people being bullies, and you have big, heavy cars that aren't going to go airborne on the smallest little thing, right? So you do get aggressive driving that is punished by on track by the other drivers being aggressive in return. In F1, where you have open wheel cars, getting that close and putting a wheel in front of another wheel gets real hairy real quick. We've seen it with Alonso and Hamilton. We've seen it with Alonso and Stroll. We've seen it with, I think, Esteban and Alonso.
Jeez, he's involved in all these.
I wonder what the pattern is.
Esteban. Anyways.
We have Grosjean and Hamilton in Spa.
Oh my God, I watched that the other day.
These are nightmare situations. And you can say, okay, racing is dangerous. Yes, racing is dangerous. You don't have to make it more dangerous. And you don't have to risk other people's lives who aren't involved in the fight doing it, right? As safe as these cars have gotten, there is still a lot of inherent risk in if you put a car moving at an extremely high rate of speed that relies on downforce to keep it on the track. As soon as you start breaking those elements, you lose downforce, and then that's when you start to get airplane collisions because it's not doing what it should anymore.
And you're right. And if the cars are getting lighter, faster for 2026, they got to clamp this down now. I'm just saying, I was kind of hoping there would be more Verstappens, maybe a little less naughty, but it's a crapshoot. And if he has to retire because he can't deal with this anymore, he can't not be an asshole, so be it. Hard racing is dead. Long live hard racing. And I think the idea of Max retiring after next year, I think that's going to pick up steam. Because I think next year is going to be tough for him, and he's just going to keep doing stuff like this. And he's not going to have a 7-race lead to fall back on. He's just legitimately going to fall down the pecking order. They're going to phase someone like him out and being more clear in the rules. And he might have to leave. Because does he want to go through another Red Bull rebuild? I don't think so. He might just have to retire.
I mean, it's a theory, and I don't necessarily disagree with it, but it's very clear that he doesn't care what other people say or think. He's going to continue racing as long as he wants to race, and whether that's next year or 10 years from now or when he's 45. I don't... We will never know until he decides.
I think they're going to phase him out. And the way Norris immediately went and said, he's so dangerous, it's like, dude... Don't turn into Hamilton that way. Hamilton was never that guy until recently. Young Hamilton was Max Verstappen, just cleaner and smarter about it. And I think that's what Norris needs to be. Young Lewis Hamilton. Not baby Lewis Hamilton. Not go call daddy to help me in those situations. I didn't like his radio etiquette. I thought in my head, he should have at that moment been willing to crash into Max and tell him, like, I'm not going to mess. Like, you're not going to fuck around with me. I'll hit you back.
Well, Norris knows that the only person who loses in that situation if he hits Max is Norris.
I'm glad you said that. This year.
Yes.
But next year he sets a tone.
Sure.
And that's what you and I have been talking about. That's what the real goal is here. They're probably not going to win this year. Or Norris is probably not going to win this year.
Right. McLaren's already there.
Almost. I wonder if they lose both. If they lose both, that's going to be catastrophic.
I will be very happy if they lose the Constructors' Championship to Ferrari. Not because I want Ferrari to win, just because it will make you so mad if Ferrari wins.
Yeah, after finally abandoning them, they'll win. Maybe that's the problem, was me cheering for them. Probably.
Yes.
Some small notes from Mexico. The first lap incident between Yuki, Albon. Not much there, right? But do you have any hot takes on that?
That was hard racing. All jockeying for position, 3 or 4 wide down the main straight. Yuki was on the outside. He, in all likelihood, would have been in the better position come the corner, but ran wide onto the grass, got bumped by Albon a bit, and that's all she wrote.
Two drivers that are under a lot of pressure right now. Yuki's desperate to prove that he belongs in that Red Bull. Albon is desperate to prove he's not worse than Colapinto.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not want that crash.
No, I think Albon came out okay at the end of the day. He didn't lose too much from that incident, but obviously Yuki was worse for wear there.
Yuki probably would have finished in the points if not for that incident.
Yeah, I think so.
He was doing really good. He hasn't scored points in a while, unfortunately.
Yeah.
He desperately needs it. Your comment about him getting an end-of-season test has been confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see where that goes. Haas is the other tidbit. I'm loving this team now. If I start cheering for them, they're going to fall apart, as we figured out with Ferrari. But I think I will. And especially because I know Magnussen and Hülkenberg are gone next year.
Yeah, but then you have to deal with Ocon.
Yeah, it's not great. And Behrman.
Behrman might be your boy by the end of the year.
We'll see. If he's a good developer, I will shut up and I'll do a complete 180 on him. Really, Komatsu's my boy. And I've called him from the beginning. I said he was the right hire. And yeah. Really, even Komatsu was, I didn't think would be this good. I just knew that Steiner was such a negative.
Yeah.
And that's really what it is. They went back to zero and were able to start from zero.
Yeah, and Komatsu's been there from the beginning. He just didn't have any authority to make the call.
And yeah, and he said it, like, they can finally develop mid-season now. And it shows.
Mm-hmm.
Because Alpine fell off again, Williams fell off again, VCARB fell off hard.
Yeah. And there is something to be said about one big upgrade package. If you get it right, it's amazing. But it's also a shit ton of risk if you get it wrong. Because then you're done.
And they got it wrong almost every year.
Right. Because you are limited in what you can do. And you're never testing. You're not testing like you were years previous where you had unlimited testing in season.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have any testing in season really when it comes to upgrades. So you're limited to simulations and quarter scale wind tunnel or one-third scale wind, whatever it ends up being. So there's always a correlation that needs to happen. And that's as much of a science as it is, it's not an exact science. So there is a good likelihood you're going to get it wrong. Whereas if you baby step into it and bring consistent small upgrades, then you know what's working and not, and that helps your correlation. So you can bring better upgrades through the year.
And I guess Steiner made the comment on the Pit Stop podcast. He said, we don't even have a simulator.
Mm-hmm.
So why he never thought to buy that in all those years with all the money that Haas was spending, why that was never in the budget is beyond me. I think Komatsu is going to bring that next.
Well, that is part of the deal they get with Toyota.
There you go.
Toyota is helping them develop and acquire a simulator, an F1 simulator. So based on what they're using for WEC and everything else.
Finally, sky's the limit on this team. Finally. And that's really why I'm cheering for them. Because as you know, as a Toyota driver, I want to cheer for the Toyota team. And this is the closest thing to that.
Yep.
Talk more about Behrman in a sec. Kudos to Magnussen for all the shit we've given him this year. He did something Hülkenberg didn't do. There was no DNFs in front of him. There was just Perez ineptitude, which that's how Hülkenberg got sixth with a DNF from Russell and Leclerc. Fine. Good job. Would have been a ninth or his ceiling of ninth in any other day. Magnussen didn't have those DNFs and held off Piastri.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's worth noting. Yes, it's not Hülkenberg's high of sixth, but the seventh was legitimate. No help.
Yeah. No, I think they did really well in Mexico, and hopefully they can keep it up.
And on that note, Brazil started this weekend.
I have one more thing I want to talk about.
Forget I said anything.
This is my gripe, or let's say an addition to my vendetta against Christian Horner. Someone needs to take him away from the cameras. I didn't mind him when him and Toto were going back and forth 2021.
He needed to be that way, yeah.
I think Toto was a bit of a child. You know, for such a big man, he was behaving like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And Horner kind of put him in his place. But now he's gone over the edge. After the race in Mexico, he grabbed a whole bunch of reporters and he sat down at a table with GPS printouts of Norris's lap times. His fastest lap of the race, and the lap that he had the incidents with Max.
Wow.
Okay. And he sat down there as a racing driver himself and as someone who knows how F1 works. And you can say this is why he's done this. He goes, look at this. This is Lando's fastest time. Turn four, he's this speed. The incident where he is fighting Max, he's 16 kilometers an hour faster, and he's 50 meters later on the brakes.
Wow.
And it's early in the race, and he's got 80 kilos more fuel.
So?
And? Well, Lando would have never made the corner. Lando didn't make the corner. What's the fucking point?
Max was still naughty, yeah. You're right.
If anything, that proves the point that Max should have got the penalty, because all Max had to do was keep his fucking line. Lando would have run wide, would have cut the corner, had to give it back. Surprise, like he fucking did.
Yeah.
Why is anybody listening to this clown?
You and I have been saying all year he needs to go. Or the second, at least the second Nui resigned because of him, he needed to go.
Who's going to replace him? Jonathan Wheatley's gone.
Anybody at this point. They're starting from zero next year. Their best engineer is gone. He should go too. And it's the same thing I was just saying about Max. Like, at this point, do both of them want to go through another rebuild with Red Bull? He's brought it as far as he can. Yes, it's his team. But I think now, like you're saying, you're doing more harm than good.
Yeah, but I think this is the character arc, though. He's hit that point where it's too late to back out, and now he has to become the one that kills it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
If I'm going down, I'm taking you all with me type of thing?
No, I genuinely think that he believes he's still the savior that Red Bull needs. And he's too arrogant to see it. This is a bad dictator arc.
Mm.
This is a Mussolini, Ceausescu type arc.
Bernie Ecclestone, as you pointed out.
Yes.
To your point, when he put Toto in his place, he was acting like the underdog, nitpicking at him. And that was perfect for what Red Bull needed that year, because mm-hmm. they were the underdog. Now he's doing that as the aggressor. And dictators often do that at the end of their time, where they start acting like, everybody's against me, that's why I'm dictating the things the way I am.
Right before they end up on their knees.
Or with their heads off, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't we just say no more on your knees comments?
The difference is mine was the implication of a gun to the head. I know you do other things on your knees, but...
Yeah, my mind definitely went the wrong place. I just played myself there. I won't cut this out. Okay. Brazil.
Brazil.
Looking like it's going to be a great weekend.
Yeah.
So, confirmed in the last couple hours, Max taking an engine penalty.
Mm-hmm.
5-place grid penalty, so that's going to start some fireworks.
Is it only 5? You only took the engine?
Only took 5. Probably for the best. This is probably the course to do it. They are still looking pretty fast. Red Bull, they're not out of it. And Bearman is racing this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Who looked amazing in practice and even sprint qualifying.
He looked very good.
I have to eat it.
He out-qualified Hülkenberg.
Not just that. He was high. He was 5th in SQ2. That I did not expect.
He qualified... 6th, 7th?
This is what I was going to ask you, actually. Qualified 10th, he didn't set a time in SQ3.
Mm.
Why? Okay. Did Haas stop that? Did Haas say, like, okay, you've done all you need to do. Let's not make Kevin look that much bad for that worse for his last 3 races. Like, something was up there.
In sprint qualifying, you only get 1 set of tires.
The softs.
Well, in any of them. In SQ2, in SQ3, 2, 1, you only get 1 set of tires for the session. So SQ3, you get a set of tires and you have to use that set. SQ2, you get a set of tires. You have to use that set. You can't change through multiple sets. Right? So, and in SQ1 is when they get the soft.
Oh.
So I think what ended up happening is he... He said he didn't set a time.
He did not set a time.
Did he not set a time because he got track limits, I think.
Okay.
If I'm remembering correctly, he went his lap, his attempt at a lap went beyond track limits turn 4.
And you only get one lap in SQ3, right? If I'm not mistaken.
You can take more, but I think what ended up happening is he pushed so hard for that lap that the tire was gone. They didn't think it had another lap in it.
Mm.
And it was over track limits, so they just said, you know what? We made it, so we'll leave it there.
Okay, so unfortunately, he makes a mistake in SQ3, but it happens. I'm trying my hardest to be very fair with this guy this weekend. He's doing a last-minute show again. I think, well, the first two, like the Saudi Arabia and Azerbaijan, were very lackluster. They were overvalued. This is actually good. This, he's been legitimately fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he deserves the entire weekend to show what he can do. And I think he will do something good tomorrow. Like you've said off the microphone, Haas is usually fast here.
Yes.
Which is not an excuse. It just means, hey, you're in a good position, Ollie. Take it.
Yeah. And I think I've mentioned it before. Like, the track in Brazil is a very fluid track. Everything flows nicely. There's no awkward corners. There's no fumbly bits. It's not that it's not difficult. It has its challenging aspects to it, but it is a very fluid, very nice flowing track. And that speaks well to a car that you're not trying to overdrive.
Mm.
So I think this is one of these things where the Haas is probably very well tailored to more conventional types of tracks. And if the driver is confident in not trying to outperform the car, it will give them time. And I think that's what we're seeing here and what we have seen in years past.
Hmm. So good luck to Ollie. I hope he does it. I'll give him this. He's once again faster than Hülkenberg in qualifying, like in Azerbaijan.
Mm-hmm.
So it bodes well.
Yep.
I was looking up during SQ2, or SQ1, and Norris was 8 tenths faster than everybody else. That's Red Bull 2023 shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking like it's going to be a McLaren 1-2. The cards are showing that, or at least it's in the cards. Why was that so hard for me to say? A McLaren 1-2 is in the cards.
Yes. So I'm looking at qualifying results now. So Piastri is P1, and he's only 3 hundredths. Yeah, 3 one-hundredths away from Norris. So it's relatively close between the two of them.
And then him, and then Norris and Charles is.
Two-tenths? Tenth and a half?
I'm pretty sure everybody went on softs. So in the race, I'm pretty sure, like we saw last year, it's either hard or medium. And even the hard is shit. You want medium.
They went softer this year, so all three tires are a step softer than they were last year.
So then I think we're going to see a lot of people start hard, finish medium. And maybe even a two-stop. Medium, medium, soft.
No, we're not. Are we talking about the
race? The race, yes.
Mm. Okay, so yeah, maybe a two-stop in the race. I think the sprint's going to be a single or a no-stop.
Yeah, single-shot medium probably makes the most sense, which still favors the McLaren.
I don't know if the medium will do it.
Ooh. How many laps? 19, I think. Something like that. 19 laps.
19, 20, 21, something like that.
Yeah, actually, you know what? You're right. 20 on the medium on this course is that's tough. That's a tough ask.
It's a quick lap, but it is actually it was resurfaced last year, but they did something stupid.
What'd they do?
They cut grooves into the track.
Ooh, whereabouts?
A couple of corners, they've cut grooves into the track in different orientations to help it drain better. But it doesn't appear to have been well thought out, because at least what some of the people were saying is it doesn't look like they're actually cut properly to drain the track, and water will end up sitting in them.
Ooh.
That only matters if it rains.
It almost did today.
Yeah. The bigger concern there is a track with grooves in it is more abrasive.
Is these grooves are offline or online?
Both.
Ooh.
And like I said, it's only at certain places, so it's not like the track overall is more abrasive, but now you have grooves in the track that will act as effectively little razor blades to remove a little bit more tire every time you go off over it.
Which could be good if they put it between the first two turns, I guess, or the first sequence of turns. You know, I'm talking about the first two DRS zones. Remember last year there was a lot of complaints that they're, you were just a sitting duck?
Mm-hmm.
In between turn one and turn two, like there was no way to defend because there was just two straight DRS zones. So if one of those grooves is on, say, the second DRS zone, fewer drivers are going to want to go onto the grooves. That's my thought process. If that's that bad, yeah.
It's not bad enough to cause that, no.
Okay, so. No. Then they still didn't solve that, too. That was a big issue with Brazil last year, so. As bad as these grooves are, that might still be a big talking point at the end
of
the week.
You're thinking of the DRS zone on the start-finish straight leading into turn one leaves everybody.
Into the Senna S's, and then you're a sitting duck. That's what Ricardo complained about last year. That's why Perez lost the podium to Alonso. Kudos to Alonso. Yeah. We'll see if that's a big talking point this year.
Yeah.
Do you want to get into predictions? Do you have anything you want to bring up about Brazil?
Just a couple of comments on Ollie Bearman. We've given him a bit of shtick because he hasn't had a great F2 season, but I got to give him credit. He gets called up last minute and he gets out there and he performs. More or less unprepared. He's been called on more than any other reserve driver in recent history, as far as I can remember, other than Nico Hülkenberg.
In 2020, yeah.
But in that case, Nico wasn't far out of a race drive and he is an experienced F1 driver. So to call up Bearman three times to do races like this last minute when he wouldn't have been in Brazil. Right. And this is where Haas did, their own reserve driver, Pietro Fittipaldi, a little dirty. Tells you how much faith they have in Pietro. He was at the track as their reserve driver, and Kevin called out sick, and they flew Ollie Bearman in.
That's rude, man. Why? If I'm him,
no, I'm wrong. Ollie was already there. Ollie was there for Ferrari. But to go all the way down the pit lane and say, "Hey, can you suit up for us? Come over here. We don't want our guy."
You've talked about it before. The 1 second a lap off of everybody in 2020, or like a lap down. From he was 19th and lap down from 18th.
When the car wasn't that bad.
It was bad. The 2020 car was, Haas was really bad. People forget. But yeah, you're right. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, that was 2021 levels bad.
Yes.
Yeah. But where I was going with this is you have to give Bearman credit for the work ethic. He gets called up last minute, not expecting to drive. He's in there and he's not just puttering around. He's setting good, consistent times. Goes out there, qualifies well. For someone who is not an F1 driver currently, I got to give it to him. He's done well. He's handled that pressure pretty good.
To agree with you, this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to leave him alone this weekend. Good. I'm not going to root against him.
That's all I can ask of you.
Okay. I still want to see, now I'm curious to see what a full season is with this kid. I think it's going to be awful. But this weekend, you know what? Go for it, Ollie. If you get into the top six, I'll shut up. Even the top 10, I'll be impressed. But I think a full season will show if he's really made of it. This brings up your point. You brought this up. I forgot to mention it. Early in the season, you brought up how F2 cars are closer to F1 than they've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that transition now is showing itself, or the fruits of that are showing, because you see like Colapinto's not struggling, Bearman's not struggling. If you're just a steady, like you said, driver that doesn't want to overdrive, just want to be steady, you're going to get rewarded, at least early on, if the car is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to leave Colapinto alone this weekend too. I think you put me in my place last week, but I'm still intrigued to see where he goes.
I am too, and he wasn't strong this weekend, at least yet. Sorry, he qualified 14th for the sprint, and Albon is up there in 9th. Could have been better, but I believe he also had a time deleted.
Hmm. Colapinto has not qualified well. His superpower has actually been the race. He's only qualified, I think, decent in... Azerbaijan, he wasn't even in Q3, I don't think.
No, I can't remember, but the Williams have, between the two of them, Alex and Franco, they've qualified closer together than they currently are.
And he's a lot better than, a lot closer to Albon than Sargeant ever was, too.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm not arguing, is that replacing him with Logan, like you said early in the season, anybody replacing Logan is going to be better, even if it was Antonelli. And we're seeing that. I'm intrigued to see what happens to Mercedes. That's another one. They've fallen off again.
They're still chasing inconsistency. They still get a lot of bouncing.
Antonelli's going to come in hot into that seat, into a car that's not necessarily at its peak, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting to see how he deals with it. Does he have a tame first season, or does he just go for it and crash the first 6 out of 7 races?
Yeah, exactly.
And Toto's going to say it's all good, no matter what he does.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's give some Brazil predictions and then we'll wrap it up.
All right.
So I said it earlier. I'll start from 1-2 here. I think it's going to be Lando 1, Oscar 2. I have a feeling even in the sprint, Oscar's going to move over to let Lando through.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be smart. They need to do something like that.
Yep.
3. Wow, who do I want third right now? I'm going to give Max a chance. I'll put Max 3. And qualifying in the race is going to be different. Perez is actually surprisingly strong here. So I'll go Carlos 4, Perez 5, which means Charles Leclerc will probably finish in the podium, but I'm okay. Every time I say Carlos is going to do good, Charles outshines him. Every time I say Charles is going to do good, Carlos outshines him. So I'm willing to die on that hill.
So that's Carlos 4, Perez 5?
Yeah. I'm going to give Perez a chance this weekend. He is decent at this track.
All right. I'm going to say Lando. And this is simply because I think Oscar will move over for him.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, Oscar, you think, would have been the true winner.
I think so. And as I mentioned a little while ago, the nature of the track kind of rewards smooth driving styles. And I think there are a few drivers on the grid that are inherently smooth, which gives them a benefit in these types of tracks. And I think Oscar is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at this point, it's probably been made very clear that if they want to maximize the points and really stick it to
Red Bull,
Lando needs to win.
Mm-hmm.
And Oscar can fight for as much as he wants, but Lando needs to win.
Yeah, we can. If you still drive like you, we'll win the Constructors. And then, like you said, Lando will slip one under the Red Bull's nose.
Right, because technically Piastri is still in the running, but he's... I think at the end of this race, depending on where he falls, he's probably mathematically out. Carlos is already mathematically out.
Mm.
So we're knocking off the possible title contenders now.
Very interesting.
But that being said, Piastri doesn't come in second.
Ooh.
I think Sainz is going to be up there again.
Mm.
Piastri in third. Max in fourth.
It's probably right. I just gave him a chance.
And George seems to do well in Brazil, so.
He's also inconsistent, though.
Which is why I'm giving him fifth. Mm.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see a double DNF from Mercedes this weekend. That's what I'm going to say. I just, Hamilton's off it. And George, you just, it's anybody's guess with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like we talked about last week, just nobody's really, nobody's bringing up the fact that he's crashed two of the last three qualifying. Or I think, or practice or something. Like he's destroyed his car.
Qualifying.
Yeah. And, but one was on major upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when your sister team got rid of Sargeant for exactly that.
Well, Mercedes has now said that because of the damage bill, they don't, in order to stay under the cost cap, they can no longer upgrade the car in any way. So they can't even reproduce current spec parts. So upgrades that have been ruined are now completely off the table, and they're needing to piece together kind of Frankenstein versions of their upgrades.
And when you put that all together with his last season too, I understand 2022 he was decent. He's a bust. It's clear. It's a bust situation with George.
Yep.
He's not looking good. Why would you re-sign him after 2025? There's not a good reason. The thought of him going to Red Bull surprisingly makes sense to me in the sense that anybody will be better than Perez right now. And they have no faith in their junior drivers.
Yes.
So that switch might happen. Like, okay, we'll take George. Like, if you don't want him, Mercedes. You have an experienced hand, someone who can play second. Oh, can't play second field to Max. He's a piece of shit to him.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say it again. I've said it before. I'm not entirely sold that Russell is a real person.
He's Woody from Toy Story?
I think he's just AI.
Man, we got to get a press pass and find this out for ourselves.
There's something about him. It's just something unsettling about his face.
Some
doesn't look real.
They call him the most handsome. I completely disagree with that in the paddock.
I would agree with you.
Makes no sense.
I've said this before. I call him the French boy prince.
Explain yourself.
He looks and he acts like that medieval aristocracy, you know, which is also famous for inbreeding and some very odd facial features.
If you told me he was inbred, yeah. Okay, good point. Well made. Man, we go from all the weird sexual theories on this podcast. Okay, P10. This is a tough one. I'm not going to say Bierman because I think he's higher up. But who would be 10th in this race? I'll go Lawson.
Okay. I'm going to go Bottas.
Ooh.
Because he performed in qualifying.
To the best of the Sauber's ability, which is 15th.
Yes, which I do want to talk about that Sauber, but we'll get through this first.
Okay. Yeah. And then the crazy prediction. I'm going to say on and off rain in the race.
Is that really crazy?
Creates a four stop.
Okay. I'm going to go something similar, not necessarily calling out rain, but rain has caused quite a few of these in the past in Brazil, where we see, you know, potentially 10 DNFs.
That's why you have Bottas P10. I like it. I really like what you just did there. Cool.
So I'm going to put... let's do it this way. No more than 10 cars finish.
We haven't seen that in a long time in modern F1.
Yep.
The closest, I think, was it was Hungary 2021 when we saw the bowling at the beginning with Bottas hitting the Norris for Verstappen and Perez.
Was that, or would Turkey have been closer? Because we lost a shit ton of cars in Turkey, didn't we?
In 2021?
Yeah.
I can't remember correctly. I just know 12 cars finished at Hungary that year.
Safety car restart where they all kind of got bunched up and then absolutely annihilated.
That was 2020.
It was 2020?
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I think only 10 drivers finished that race.
Was that Turkey or was that...
Portugal, maybe.
No, I think...
Mugello. Mm.
I think it may have been Mugello.
Something like that happens, though. That's a good prediction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what do you want to talk about with the Sauber seat? That's the last seat available.
I don't want to talk about the seat.
Oh, okay.
Other than to say it's clear that Joe knows that he's not going to be there because he's been in 20th position for the last six races, something like that.
And a second off Bottas.
Yeah, it's insane. He is over a second slower than Lance Stroll in P19.
Jesus Christ, man. The fact that he got three seasons makes me sick to my stomach. It really does. Like, he had no business getting this third year.
But he wasn't this bad. This is really bad. So he knows he's not going to be there, and he's given up. Like, I haven't seen an interview with him. I haven't seen press conferences, nothing. Like, he just doesn't exist anymore.
This would be a good time for Sauber to try somebody else. This would be a time for a Porsche. To see if your reserve or your young crew can do anything that maybe Joe can't.
Or a Maloney.
Yeah, but you and I said, you and I would love to see it, but he's kind of resigned the fact that that's not going to happen.
Yeah. He's gone to Formula E. But what I did want to talk about, I've mentioned previously that I'm seeing things in that Sauber that explain the performance that they've lost. And this week they've brought an upgrade to address what I was seeing. So when you look at all the other F1 cars, the Red Bull is a prime example of this. Those cars hit the track and they are flat. You don't see any movement in the car. It corners, it goes over, bumps, whatever. Everything stays nice and consistently flat. If you watch the edge of the floor, there's no movement side to side. They hit a curb and they bounce, right? They lift off the ground, tires off the ground, the whole thing. Not a great way to go over a course, but you need to be on that limit of some of these apexes, right? And that's what I mentioned with Max in Mexico on turn three, just clobbering the curbs, bouncing all over the place. Fine, that didn't seem to hurt him too much, at least not that particular corner. The Sauber, looking at it in previous races, you see the thing roll through corners. And that blew me away because you never see that on an F1 car. Even the bad ones, even years ago, you never see them roll through corners. They're supposed to be too stiffly sprung. The roll bars are supposed to be too stiff. And they're supposed to be so low to the ground that you can't tolerate any side-to-side movement. So why the fuck am I watching a Sauber roll through the corners like a sedan? The thing looks so soft and so out of control all year. This weekend, they brought an entirely new suspension package.
Oh, wow.
And Valtteri put it up there. Now, he qualified P15, but he had something happen in SQ2. For whatever reason, I don't think he did a second run. But his first run, relative to everybody else's first runs, didn't have him in P15. I think he was P12 or P11.
In points fighting positions.
Yes. So.
And he hasn't finished higher than 13th all year. So, yeah, that's a big deal.
Right. And he has had some decent qualifying where he's been 12th, 13th, something like that. But this weekend, it looked okay. Now, Joe still finished a second off a Stroll in 19th. So that, I think, is just Joe resigning the fact that he's sitting in the car for four races and that's it.
No freedom. No, I have nothing to lose, which is kind of sad. You would think that would be is the way to go out.
Right.
If either one of them gets points, they put themselves back in the discussion for next year. So why not go for it, Joe? Like, I think that he's just legitimately that bad. But we'll see.
And like I said, I think he's probably been told Audi doesn't want you. I don't care how much money you throw at it, Audi doesn't want you. Audi doesn't need the Chinese money because they've already invested hundreds of millions of dollars in building an engine and building a team and building factories in Germany. Which, historically, racing teams based in Germany or with operations built in Germany don't go well.
No. Not at all. BMW Sauber.
And who was it? Oh, fuck. It was either Beyond the Grid or Formula for Success. They were talking to somebody about this. It was Beyond the Grid, and it was an older German driver.
Daimler or something? No. Christian Daimler or something, I think I saw recently.
No, that was this week's. It's not him. It's from before. Someone who raced for Zach Speed.
You lost me.
Anyway, effectively what they were saying is operations based out of Germany, the German labor laws are so strict and so worker-focused that when the day is done, when you've done your eight-hour shift, you go home and nobody can do anything about it. Whereas operations based out of the UK, the work ethic is we don't go home. We have no home. The factory is where we are. We have to win, and we're going to do it this way. And it's not to say that the Germans don't, but in general, they believe in a more balanced work-home life.
Mm-hmm.
So, not looking great, especially when you consider that Mercedes doesn't have F1 facilities based in Germany.
That's why they're successful.
Their engines, their chassis, the whole race team is based out of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So,
maybe that's why Sauber's working around it by hiring Italians. Like you pointed out, you want to tell me what you told me this week? Another genius idea.
So the Ferrari strategist that has been there for quite a while, their head strategist, who is effectively responsible for the clown show that has been the last few years of strategy at Ferrari, quietly left Ferrari at the beginning of the year. And he's been on gardening leave for a number of months. And he has just signed a contract to be head of operations, or what did I call it? Sporting director, I think.
I think you said something like that. I thought.
I think it's...
Oh, so he's not a strategist?
No, he's not part of strategy, but his role oversees strategy. But you're putting the guy who arguably led the worst strategy team in F1 in charge of your sporting operations for Audi. Well said, Nick.
I found it. It's going to be a long 2025 for Sauber.
Yeah.
The promise is that, no, we're going to be good in 2026. I don't know. It's a clusterfuck. Like, so it's Binotto again with the guy who was part of strategy who fucked Binotto out of a job. Basically.
Yeah,
basically.
Put it that way.
I know it's not exactly what happened, but like the strategy is why Binotto walked out. Or at least the laughing stock around that.
Right. Nobody's going to do this, but if I were to do a five-legged... Or if I were to do a 5Y on what the cause of Binotto's firing was, this guy would end up on one of those legs of the 5Y.
Hmm. You sure we'll have a lot of time at the end of the season. It's coming up. I'm doing my next solo is going to be Nick's news, not a therapy. So I'll be generous and unbiased. I'm going to go over Steiner's recent interviews.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
He is making up history as he goes. Anyways, maybe. Maybe you and I should take a break at the end of the season. We work hard.
We need a few weeks off at the end of the season, I think.
Yes, a few weeks. And then if we get excited, we'll get into some things. Anyways, I'm excited. I'm really, really, really excited for this race weekend. I hope it doesn't disappoint. Caught myself sleeping during the mid-stint of the Mexican Grand Prix. But I think you're right. If you actually look at the end, there was a lot going on. I should have.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm going to have that with Brazil. Anyways, anything else you want to add before we go our separate ways?
No, I think that's it for me today.
F1 underscore philosophy at Instagram, F1 philosophy at YouTube, and F1philosophypod@gmail.com to join our fantasy league. If you can beat us in 3 races, we'll retire. Okay. We'll check back after this week. It's going to be a good race. Talk to you soon.
Good night.
Good night.